You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
What's this button do? Whoa!
You are now entering the green world.
Last week, Minister for Conservation, Tama Potaka, announced an update on the predator-free 2050 strategy, which aims to rid New Zealand of rats, possums and stoats. $5.5 million of funding was set aside with the aim of making Wellington the first predator-free city in New Zealand within the next 10 years. I spoke to James Russell, Professor of Conservation Biology at the University of Auckland, about the progress and impact of predator-free projects in Wellington and nationwide. We heard an update from the Conservation Minister, Tama Potaka, that Wellington would be receiving $5.5 million as part of their predator-free campaign. What makes Wellington special and poised to be New Zealand's first predator-free city?
That's a good question. I think to some extent Wellington's just lucky in that it got some runs on the board early. We had Zealandia, originally the Karori Wildlife Sanctuary, established there. It was our first urban predator-proof fenced mainland island, and that was really when we started to be able to show people that a lot of this wildlife restoration isn't something that has to happen on faraway islands or in the so-called backcountry, like the middle of the South Island. It can actually happen in the downtown of a city. As I always say, these birds and reptiles we're trying to save, their preferred habitat is just not being eaten alive. They don't mind whether they're nesting in a pine tree or in someone's house, as long as they've got no rats or stoats or possums eating them. They really live their best life. And then going on from that, with the predator-free New Zealand announcement in 2016, predator-free Midamar, the peninsula that the airport's on, was another of the early projects there. So again, that was taking this idea of, can we remove or eliminate, if you like, is a term we use now, the rats and stoats and possums, but without having to put the fence up. Those fences are quite obtrusive. You know, people don't like seeing a big fence. They're quite expensive, and they also have a limited lifespan. After 20 or 30 years, you have to build them again. If a tree falls down, the fence gets damaged. So could we actually use some of these landforms like peninsulas to set up a predator-free area? And Midamar really demonstrated that. So I think Wellington's really poised to go on this, but we've also had predator-free Dunedin and have got possums off their peninsula recently. But I think it's fair to say the other advantage that Wellington has is it's the politician's backyard. So, and I'm not going to be cynical about that. It's obviously where politicians are and get to see the benefits. But obviously, that's important that politicians get to see the benefits themselves, and so they can reinvest in the predator-free movement.
And what is predator-free Wellington going to look like? And what sort of the practical steps being taken to reach it? Because they're trying to do it in 10 years, is it?
Yeah. Aiming for it in the short term as a pathway to predator-free New Zealand, and demonstrating that we can do the predator-free elimination at an urban landscape level. So zero invasive predators has been leading predator elimination in South Westland across rural landscapes. So that includes backcountry, forest area, farmland, and also some urban areas, but very much in that rural landscape, whereas predator-free Wellington will be doing it right in the middle of a city with all the urban infrastructure there. So what it will look like at first is just doing what we call knockdown, which is trying to take out as many of the pests as possible using conventional tools. But then, as any expert in eradication knows, it's the last 1% of individuals can take 90% of the time to catch. So we sometimes have to, well, we have to double or triple down there, and we use sometimes what's called a change of method. So we change methods from, say, traps that work well at high density, and then we have to use some very specific methods to find these last survivors. But as we go along this pathway, and what's interesting about predator-free New Zealand is that this pathway is, instead of just seeing eradication as a one-off event that happens at a point in time, seeing if we can transition through these different steps to achieve that elimination. And then as we move towards that elimination and catching the very last individuals, there probably will always be individuals sneaking back in. They'll come in on all kinds of ways. They could come in on cars, vehicles, dump trucks. They might come in on ferries. They might even come in on a plane. They could just walk around boundaries and borders. So when we say predator freedom and elimination, that's not to say that there's not a single individual left. It just means that any individuals that pop up, we eliminate, just as we were doing when we were stamping out COVID, when it started to pop up around our community during the pandemic. So we're looking at maintaining this predator elimination status. And then the benefits of that, the biodiversity outcomes that follow, we'll start to see some of these rarer birds. We see the fantail, piwaka waka, and the New Zealand wood pigeon, the kereru. They increase in numbers, but then we start to see some of the rarer birds that were previously not there come back. The kararea, the New Zealand falcon, had a comeback that kind of started around the pandemic in Wellington. And then if we're really lucky, what we would hope to see is the tutuwai, the New Zealand robin, and the tiakea, the North Island saddleback. They can spread out of the Zealandia sanctuary into the wider areas of Wellington, where at the moment they quickly get munched by rats or stoats.
What lessons can we learn from the whole Wellington story? How can the policies implemented there be expanded to other cities across the country?
What we're hoping, and some scientists around the Motu have done some great studies showing, how do you get the relative balance of predator control and reforestation? So you do need to have some forest for food sources and such for them. So we can look at rolling out some of those lessons from Wellington across other countries. Like Auckland could be really well placed to be a predator-free city. It's got two lovely harbours and a really narrow isthmus, which really is a great bottleneck for catching these predators as they disperse without having to use a fence. And then we've got the two lovely ranges of the Hanuas and the Waitakere's, which are places where we could really get some bird numbers back in large air numbers. So there, and then expanding predator-free Dunedin and then working up Northland, we can see there's the narrow isthmus up there is just an area we could work down or up, if you will, to remove these predators. So really, what Predator Free Wellington's going to hope to show over the time frame is that it can be done once there, and then we can remodel that elsewhere and really start to put the puzzle pieces of a Predator Free New Zealand together. And so we're all working in our own backyard, hometowns and reserves, but if we look up, everyone else is doing it elsewhere.
About putting those pieces together, how are we tracking nationally towards this big project of Predator Free 2050? Is it sort of realistic, that time frame? And
I think it's on track. I don't dwell too much personally on the time frame. It's not like a university assignment where if you don't get it in, yeah. I don't think it should be like a university assignment where if you don't get it in, you fail. You know, if we only did it by 2055, I think I'd accept that as a late assignment. Maybe we'll get ahead of the curve and do it by 2045. I think we're tracking in the right direction is the key thing. And the new predator-free strategy that was launched at the same time has kind of emphasized that. There's kind of four themes there, which is mobilization, ratcheting in the gains, and that's a really key one. That's making sure that when we do create a predator-free area, we don't lose it if the funding stops. So we don't want to go backwards anywhere. So make sure that once we've got it, we've locked it in, and then we can mobilize people, communities, but also iwi, and then accelerate towards the predator-free goal of New Zealand. So I think that's what we're seeing with predator-free South Westland, 100,000 hectares that are largely eliminated of rats, stoats and possums now. And then predator-free Wellington will add 18,500 hectares. And then hopefully we'll see more of these projects, which many are already going away. Predator-free Dunedin, predator-free Banks Peninsula, Taranaki, Monga, many more, which I haven't been able to give a shout out to here. Mm-hmm. All of them are doing their part.
Do you think there is enough support for all these different predator-free projects from the government? Is there enough funding for it?
I think more funding is always helpful. It will help us get there faster, but we also don't want to move so fast that if we have a global shock or surprise like a pandemic or an oil crisis, mm-hmm. that we don't have the funding redirected. And again, we lose those gains. We haven't locked them in. Mm-hmm. So we want to be moving at the right speed. And I think with the current government, we've seen a lot of shuffling of finances and around portfolios, not just within conservation, but also among education, law and order, and health and so on. So we need to make sure that we generate the funding to keep predator-free New Zealand going. But we also have to make sure it's not just seen as a what you could consider a welfare regime. We need to make sure that the gains from predator-free New Zealand can become self-funding through opportunities such as tourism and perhaps some of the carbon gains that eliminating possums from the landscape creates. And that creates money which we can reinvest to basically self-fund the predator-free movement.
Do you think we will see a predator-free Wellington and Auckland in the near future? And what do you think that would look and sound like?
If it's, I try to proudly keep my own backyard in the Waitakere Ranges predator-free, and I can tell you what it sounds like. It sounds louder than you think at 4 a.m. in the morning, yeah. when the tui start calling. But it's a good wake-up alarm, and so that's basically you get the return of the dawn chorus. In fact, the dawn chorus almost stops being a dawn chorus when you go out to some of our most treasured islands, Hauturu O'Toi, Little Barrier Island, and others. There is no dawn chorus, there's just chorus all the time of birds singing. So that's what I'm looking forward to. And I think, yeah, if we keep working at it, it is realistic, and we'll get there, and we'll just keep adding these pieces together.
That was the University of Auckland's Professor James Russell, speaking about recent changes to the Predator-Free 2050 strategy and efforts to make Wellington New Zealand's first predator-free city.
That was The Green World.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.